So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Man.
Who's on the inside? Rob Bartlett, that's who. And tonight, live, among other great matches, you'll see the Steiner Brothers in tag team action, plus a very special interview with Razor Ramon.
There's a great match I can't wait to see, Vince. Coco Beware versus Yokozuna. You know, the guy's got that diaper thing going right up there in the middle between the dead man's land and no man's land. And
Macho!
Hector Bartlett said that about Yokozuna. That's all I can think about right now. But also...
Welcome to Review Away, everybody. I'm John Pollock, joined as always by Wei Ting. And Wei, I see today you're celebrating the 1998 Chinese New Year with your t-shirt.
Yeah, I'm wearing this shirt that I got in 1998 during...
Around episode festival. 280, roughly.
Of
in,
Raw.
In Raw history.
Oh, okay. Yes.
What a tie-in.
Thank you. Thank you for... pointing this out. Thank you for the joke.
Were you much like me where by the end of this week you have seen enough highlights of Raw's history?
Oh yeah.
There was a lot of crossover between the 900th episode this past Monday night and the 10th anniversary from January of 2003.
I think this is a good study though. I think we saw that a lot of the same events throughout Raw's history were referred to on both episodes, and it's just interesting to see what events within the company that they hold in high regard, that they want you to remember year after year.
Exactly. And did you enjoy last week's review on the WWE Originals CD?
Sure.
We got quite a lot of feedback on it.
I enjoyed it, yeah, I did.
Because I wanted to somewhat go back to that, because this past Tuesday,
uh-huh,
we had Trish Stratus on the late shift.
Oh, that's right.
On News Talk 1010. And we came back from break playing her song, and Trish gave us some insight into that recording experience. So I know it's a week late, but I thought we'd play Trish's comments here, breaking down her performance on the WWE Originals album. So let's hear Jason Agnew here on the late shift on News Talk 1010.
Sorry to call so late. I was missing you and I just wanted to talk. Maybe we can talk tomorrow.
Make up your mind. Don't you want me like I wanna feel that a touch that haunts me every night.
Welcome back to the late shift. It's like a late night phone call. We've opened up the phone lines. I thought it was appropriate to play a little bit of the sultry sounds of Trish Stratus singing.
Yep. Thank you very... That was...
This is from the WWE Originals album.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked about...
What a great idea. I mean, that is groundbreaking. I've got an idea. We have these wrestlers who perform athletic movements in a ring. Let's get them in a studio and record a song each.
Okay. But there was, at a certain time, in the cheesy 1980s world, there was the wrestling album, there was Piledriver, you know, hearing Coco Beware, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, sounds like an augment, you know, that has some charm to it, and
yes,
maybe, and I thought that had a little bit of charm to it.
Really? That track particularly?
That
or
one,
was it
right
the whole,
there.
The album, did you find?
That was my favorite,
yeah,
mainly because I knew one day, mm-hmm, I might have a radio show where, mm-hmm, I could play that in front of you.
Listen, I'm not embarrassed of that. I listen to that ballad all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's just one of the many facets of Trish Stratus, and that's what I wanted to bring up, is you just
do
everything. What was your reaction when they came to you and said, we'd like you to sing?
And I said, why?
And we'd like you to sing the love song with the sultry voice.
Like, I think what they tried to do was match up, like, what would this personality sing, right? Like, and clearly, a love ballad, you know. And I mean, Jim Johnston was the producer of that. He was like a WWE guy. He did most of the music of that you hear when the wrestlers come out.
Yeah.
And he thought that it would be really, you know, nice to hear, you know, he thinks every man's fantasy is to hear me on the phone, wait, me at home waiting for them. So that's what we did. And mission accomplished.
Indeed.
And I'm really seeing, I look at this, I'm on the airwaves with my single.
Yeah. We played it on the, on the radio.
Thank you. My
that
iTunes.
That could start to chart now.
My iTunes will go up now.
Get some resits on that. That's what you could do.
Good call on that one.
All right.
So wait, I think it's safe to assume, Trish, not a fan of the concept of WWE Originals, and you were texting me as this interview was occurring, enjoying it very much.
I was in my car. I was getting home from work, and I just all of a sudden heard this song out of nowhere. And I don't think Trish knew about it either.
No, she did not.
Jason, for the record, it wasn't even you that set that up. It was Jason Agnew.
It was Jay, yes. Because we were originally going to play that on The Law, and we weren't able to get to that clip. It was because I had the clip of Jericho and Christian doing the $1 bet with that song coming out of it, and we didn't have time to play it, so Jay decided he would hold it over till Tuesday, and there we got to play it. So now the whole world got to hear the title of her song, which escapes me. Make Up Your Mind?
Make Up Your Mind, yes.
So there we go, everyone. That now that great. We've officially wrapped up WWE Originals, I found it very fun to review a CD last week.
It was something different.
And this, in all honesty, way, I picked the 10th anniversary of Raw, and I thought it was just a regular edition of Raw.
Oh, really?
I didn't realize it was this award show. I remember the award show now after seeing it, but when I picked this, I had assumed it was just a two-hour Raw with like clips and stuff. So
this didn't even actually air on during Raw.
This was like a Tuesday night special or something on the USA Network, and I would assume, well, they're somewhere here in Canada.
Mm.
It would have been airing on
Spike, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, not USA.
So, Wei, let's get into our review here. It's the WWE Raw 10th Anniversary Special from January 2003 at The World in New York, back when the WWE had their own restaurant in Times Square that ended up losing them millions and millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I've never been, but you have.
No, I never went there.
Oh, I thought you said you did us, but a buddy of yours went and stole a menu. Is that correct?
It was a listener.
Yeah, a listener
on our show who did that.
Our buddy.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, your name escapes at the time.
That's okay. The show started off with kind of a montage of clips from the past. We saw some famous moments such as the 1-2-3 Kid upsetting Razor Ramon, Vader delivering a Vader bomb to Gorilla Monsoon, and going through some of the different openings, and this was then all done to Ba Wada Ba by Kid Rock. They really love Kid Rock in the WWE. If you go back in history over the last 10 years of how much they have used Kid Rock.
Yeah. I don't know where I've read, but somebody asked a question about the music and the place in the WWE. Maybe it was a Dave Lagana interview that I listened to, where somebody, I think it was maybe Brian Alvarez, questioned him about the music use in the WWE, and he went on to say that Kevin Dunn is the guy who picks these songs, and he has such limited knowledge of music that's out there. He just kind of goes back to the same things, and he just thinks these shitty new metal.
It's like these go-to bands
cool.
They have. It's like Kid Rock for the longest time, Creed,
Pool.
Saliva.
Yeah,
it's like these. They have such a small, and now we have
Ba with the Ba. That song came out
99.
So by this time, it was already 4 years old.
Music is, you know, it's something that I don't know. I just find for shows like this, you want to be current, and even 4 years, it's just like, you know, to me,
you either go current or you go really old, like what the UFC does with The Who.
Sure. Where there's that kind of, I guess, sort of nostalgia feel. Or
some songs are timeless, but like a song like Ba with the Ba just brings me back to 1999.
the editors got very creative as they decided to match up clips with the lyrics, such as "Get in the pit and love somebody," as you saw Trish Stratus thrown into a mud pit, and then Lita making out with Matt Hardy to the lyrics.
Get in the pit and try to love someone!
Now, Wei, as an editor, maybe you can give us some perspective if you find this creative on behalf of the WWE, or just smacking us in the face and reminding us, hey, the lyrics are saying what we're showing you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Get in the pit and try to love somebody.
I don't know what Kid Rock means with those lyrics, but probably the editors probably didn't necessarily care or understand it. They just took it for its literal meanings and just thought, how do we relate this to our footage?
Well, we have someone being thrown into a pit, and we have...
someone loving somebody.
Trying to love somebody.
Yeah.
Lots of non-PG content showing here, Wei. This was a very different time period for the WWE mm-hmm. 7 years ago. And they then kicked off the show where Bawa to Bawa went into their Union Underground theme song, Move to the Music.
I like that song.
Did you? I was never a big fan of it.
What was your favorite Raw opening?
I always liked that the one they had, what was it called? Thorn in Your Eye.
Me too.
I think that's what you associate with, like, the peak period as well.
Yeah.
And I think you just naturally associate the glory period with a song, and that, to me, would be it. Union Underground, I was never a big fan of. Then they went after that to Papa Roach, right?
Yeah. Was that Papa Roach?
It was Papa Roach who did the one before Nickelback.
Okay. Yeah. I guess they did. But I agree with you. I like the opening. I used to love the opening of... just Stone Cold walking through the walls with the flames.
Or in that factory.
Yeah, the factory.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
The guys are having a battle royal. That's the problem, though. They can never shoot those again because guys would always leave the company.
That was always the problem. They had, like, that's a super expensive shoot, and they couldn't just simply insert someone else. Whereas now, it's very easy
just to
take someone out of the opening, much like they did with Tiffany a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
We're recording this on Thursday. She's appearing in court today.
For what?
Didn't you hear the story with her and Drew McIntyre?
Oh.
They got into a big fight at a hotel in L.A.
And what is she fighting in court?
Spousal abuse? I don't know. I don't know what the charges are. But we'll keep you updated on that, folks. Tiffany.
Very observant, John. I wouldn't have noticed that on the Raw opening video.
Well, she's on SmackDown, so it's actually the SmackDown opening, and that's okay because you don't watch SmackDown.
I don't watch it.
Nor would I if I didn't have to.
But I did see NXT over this past week.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Did you see it?
Let's quickly talk about this.
Okay.
Because I, at your urging, I skipped the whole show and watched the last segment.
Yeah.
What a clusterfuck.
What a clusterfuck.
What was going on in this segment?
I don't know. First of all, the whole idea of doing another Nexus beatdown, it's so predictable, and it's not good. To me, it is so poorly done this time around.
A lot of people are suspecting that Caval and McGillicuddy were not clued in that this beatdown was going to occur.
Really?
And that's why. Well, you would have to imagine that the winner was probably, like, it seems, especially on NXT, they like to throw curveballs at these guys. You saw a lot of that in the first season of NXT where they'd be given just out of the blue, they'd have to think on their feet.
I understand.
But that was such a sloppy beatdown.
Like, this just makes their product look bad. It doesn't make the wrestlers look bad. It makes them look bad overall.
What do you think of the...
Quickly, for people who missed it, what actually happened?
Well, they announced Caval was the winner. He was celebrating with Michelle McCool and Layla. Then McGillicuddy cut a promo that was like, he started talking about the age of McGillicuddy begins now, or the era of McGillicuddy. Like, he was cutting a promo as if he had won, which made me think that they probably didn't tell him he was losing, but they told him about this promo. So he was going ahead and cutting this promo in the back of the head feeling that he had won the tournament. Which is how it came off to me. It's like you're cutting a celebratory promo, but you've lost. And even the announcers were like, okay, can this guy shut up? He lost. Mm-hmm. just ridiculous. And then the rest of the season two NXT members came out and they beat the shit out of Caval. Then the pros came in for like a minute to help Caval. Mm-hmm. And it ended with just...
And then Alex Riley and McGillicuddy came out. And Alex Riley starts attacking all the pros. He also singles out Percy Watson and starts attacking Percy Watson. Lays him out with the Michinoku driver or whatever his finisher is.
And then realized that they were supposed to be allies during this segment.
Percy Watson is thrown out of the ring. And then inexplicably runs back in.
No selling.
Moments later, helping Alex Riley.
It was so bad. Then,
so retarded.
Then Lucky Cannon gave Caval this finish where he got him on his back and like flipped him over and almost murdered Caval. Husky Harris then delivered this kind of Uranage style move to Caval where Caval was like fighting it and didn't take like a wrestling bump off of it. And then someone powerbombed him and I thought he was dead.
Yeah,
Caval was just killed during the segment.
It felt like all these guys wanted to get their finishers in, and there was just no flow to it at all.
Oh, they're so green.
The execution was so poor. The whole thing just came off as
no
a mess.
Brawl segment stands out to me as being as amateur as the one we saw on Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like that with the EV 2.0, but you know what? This was much worse.
Oh, significantly worse. That yeah. At least what they did a couple of weeks ago with Fortune attacking the EV 2.0 guys.
No, I meant the original EV 2.0 one.
Oh, the original one, yeah. Even those two, not anywhere as bad as this. And the second Fortune one I thought was actually pretty good. Anyway, it was terrible. And
do you realize how many
how many of these fucking calls. Angles we've seen? We've seen like four in the last 2 months. Retarded. And we do have the truncated season 3 of NXT coming up, featuring it's all built around Aloisa. 6'9"
That's
woman.
Her name?
It's Aloisa. I went back and listened.
I thought it was Aloysia.
That's what it looks like. It looks like Aloysia. Which Jesus Christ. It's going to be a fun season to watch.
Yeah.
All these green women. They're pros. The pros on this. You have Goldust and Primo, who can work. Then you've got Vicky Guerrero, Kelly, the Bella Twins, and Alicia Fox.
Yep.
An hour every week.
It's
Vicky is going to have to carry this on the mic.
Yeah.
This Aloisha, 6'9", is going to be like the Eli Cottonwood of this group, I have a feeling. Someone has posted a match of hers on our Facebook group, and I have not watched it yet, but the comments do not make me optimistic about her mobility in the ring.
Yeah. We should watch it and we should talk about it whenever we can.
I was impressed just with the way they shot her and when they brought up the stills of all the girls and she just towers over these women.
Yeah.
They got the size over. But we'll look forward to that next week. All right, let's get into this. Raw. This all started off with us discussing the theme songs of Raw. Our hosts for the night are Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler, and it's an award show style presentation where all the talent are sitting at tables.
Similar to the Slammies.
Very much like the Slammies. And Shawn Michaels is the first one out, and he's presenting the Diva of the Decade. And he notes that he is number one at the Royal Rumble this Sunday, and that the Divas have come a long way from Bertha Faye and Bull Nakano. And as much as I rag on John Cena, Shawn Michaels' comedy here was way worse. This was like such lame lines he had here. The nominees are Sable, Sunny, Trish Stratus, and they even included a clip of her infamous tag match with Bradshaw and Jackie Gata and Chris Nowinski, which is one of the worst matches in Raw history.
Yeah.
Lita as well.
And China.
So just to recap, two of the five nominees are in the house here. Mm-hmm. Lawler notes that Lita is tattooed in places that he would like to lick.
Like her shoulder.
Yes, he clarified that, her shoulder. They brought in this woman to do the voiceovers, who I believe does the voiceovers for like the MTV Video Awards.
Really?
Yeah. If you listen to the voice, okay. It's like that distinct female voice.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Jim Johnson was just playing around with, like, Lita's voice or something.
Yeah.
Or anyone's.
EQ.
The winner is Trish Stratusway. She was wearing an extremely short dress, and Lawler was very, very excited by this. Trish put over Moolah, Chyna, Sunny, and Sable. She thanked Finley for helping them.
A legit kayfabe-free speech. I was expecting this whole show to be in character, but Trish just delivers a straight speech as if she really won the award.
Yes, and this was at a time when the women's division was really starting to pick up. You had, like, Trish, Jazz, Victoria, Molly. Like, you had some strong female talent, and then they were working with, like, Finley and Lance Storm. And
yeah.
It was the women's matches, it was like, it was night and day from what they were like 2 years prior.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go to Jonathan Coachman and Stacy Keibler, who are doing like stand-ups by the crowd. And throughout the night, they're counting down the top 10 moments in Raw history. And they note that there were over 2 million votes online for the countdown. And they start with number 10 way from September the 27th, 1999. This is your life. But Stacy Keibler was not aware of what segment she was throwing to, and she talked about Mr. Socko's debut, and Coach just cut her off and said, no, we're going to This Is Your Life. It's a terrible fuck-up by...
Was it a fuck-up?
She thought they were going to the segment where Mick Foley introduced Socko.
She actually announced that?
She was saying... Coach set her up with some question about...
Weren't they just doing a shtick where she just plays dumb?
Well, then she played it beautifully because I thought it was legit. Maybe she was then. Keibler, they come back from the segment. Anything you want to note about This Is Your Life, Way?
Absolutely nothing.
All right.
I mean, it's a we saw it again this past Monday on the 900th episode of Raw. It was a good segment, but. This was the highest ratings that the wrestling has ever seen, or at least during the Monday Night Wars. But for me as a segment, I didn't think it was particularly great in hindsight.
It's it's a segment that they always claim is like the highest rated segment, and apparently there was a match they did with Austin and The Undertaker earlier that year that did higher. But for whatever reason, it's this segment that they always choose to... promote that way. I guess it's a sports entertainment at its finest.
Sure.
This was actually, I think that show was the last show Vince Russo ever wrote before he left for WCW.
He wrote that?
I don't know if he wrote that specific segment. Mm-hmm. I don't think he did, actually. There was, I'm trying to remember. We had someone on a few years ago who was Bill Banks.
Yeah. I would like to know. Oh, Bill Banks wrote that.
I think he had a large part of putting that together.
I think for as much...
A lot of it, I think, was improv, too.
For as much criticism as Vince Russo receives, I would like to know what he was responsible for that ended up being very successful in the WWF. I would just like to know, like, a lot of these memories we look back on fondly, and we would definitely not associate many of those with Vince Russo in our minds. I would just like to know... Just for clarity's sake.
I would say like 75% of the stuff outside of the main event you can attribute to him. I mean, he was the one that you could, if you were getting the Raw magazine at the time, like even like 96 or so, like before they embraced that attitude period, you could see the tone of the magazine was really what they modeled that whole era after. And he was directly responsible for that. To say that Vince Russo contributed nothing is... You know, he did quite a lot in the late 90s in terms of contributing to that. But I think at times as well, too much is given to him because he's been one to kind of go out and feel that he is solely responsible for that period. And it's like you had a lot of people that you were working with at the time. And
it's always been said that Vince Russo didn't work in WCW because he didn't have Vince McMahon editing his stuff.
Yeah, like Steve Austin is pretty – he's a pretty honest person in interviews and – whenever he's going over those days, Russo's name I don't think has ever come up once. It's always just him and Vince McMahon that seem to, you know, work out most of the stuff. Right. Anyway, then we come back from a break, and Coach and Keibler are continuing their their hosting duties. And Keebler notes that 10 years ago, she was in seventh grade. But the one thing in common is that both times we had the same president in George Bush. Now, this probably plays into your theory of her playing dumb, because yes, George W. Bush was the president at the time of this 10th anniversary. Yeah. But in January of 93, Bill Clinton was elected the prior November.
Hmm. Okay, but when did they actually change office?
Well, you see, she might have been saved here, because the inauguration typically takes place like the 15th, 16th of January. And they stated at the top that the first RAW was January 11th. So she might have technically been correct here.
Oh, by 5 days? Cool.
I almost guarantee that we put more thought than they did into that line. They probably just said, oh, Clinton was the president. Let's script her to have it wrong. I totally have blocked out this airhead gimmick that Stacey Keebler had. I don't recall it at all.
Yeah.
I remember Maria having it.
A lot of them have had it. A lot of them are just dumb. Or play dumb. They're very smart, probably.
Shane McMahon is out next way to present the next award called the Don't Try This at Home Award. Mm-hmm. Who the fuck named these awards? Did you catch what they called the statues?
The
Ruckus Awards.
Raw Ruckus Awards, yes.
Jesus. Fans started yelling at Shane McMahon during this segment and were like trying to throw him off.
Yeah. This fan yells, Shane, you drunk? And then Shane responds, I wish.
Is that what they yelled? That's funny.
Yeah. And then this guy, same guy, yells, you high? No response.
The nominees, Way, are Big Show's chokeslam to hell on The Undertaker, where he chokeslammed him through the ring.
Mm-hmm. Which I don't remember.
Jeff Hardy, TLC 4. They singled out Jeff Hardy. There were 7 people in the match, but apparently his performance was worthy of Don't Try This at Home. Number 3 was the Dudley Boys powerbombing Mae Young through a table, where they almost killed her.
That was a memorable one.
Yep. And Kurt Angle hitting a moonsault off of the cage to Chris Benoit. I definitely remember that spot.
Yes.
And that is the spot everyone remembers. And Benoit's subsequent headbutt off the top of the cage moments later, not remembered as much.
That match was insane.
Like that, I watched that and was like, Jesus Christ, like these guys are going to kill themselves.
Yeah, it was fucked up. And the moment Angle does that, It was one of the most memorable visuals in WWF history. For me, at least. I mean, it's not...
He was really messed up after that, too. Like, he was injured, like, significantly after that match and kept working. Like, that match took out a lot on him.
And you're absolutely right. I don't even... Until you mentioned that, I didn't even remember Chris Benoit doing that diving headbutt off the top of the cage. It was just so meaningless after that. Some commentary afterwards, I heard that Angle say that he knew Chris was going to do that headbutt spot, and Angle wanted to outdo him. That's why he did that moonsault.
Jesus.
Insane.
Following the list of nominees, there was a RVD chant. Then Big Show goes to walk up before they announce the winner, and then they announce that Angle wins, and Big Show is upstaged by Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle gets up onto the stage. He brings up Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, who hold up a U.S. flag on the stage, and they had quite the time getting their coordinates and putting the flag upright.
Mm-hmm. It's difficult.
It is. I mean, there's the stars, flag. There's the stripes, it's left, right. Tough. And this was Kurt Angle just doing his typical goof speech. He said the words, by golly, and he ended up getting cut off by the music. Now, this is all fine. Kurt Angle being a goof. Did you realize he was the WWE champion at this point?
No idea.
Well, you wouldn't have that idea by just simply watching this.
Wow.
I never was a giant fan of Kurt Angle as the comedy. I mean, he had some funny moments and stuff, but it got to... By the time he was doing the cowboy hat shit and stuff like this, it was like, okay, enough.
I thought he was funny. Is your criticism coming from the fact that he was a main eventer and it didn't belong with
I just thought him as a whole. The biggest knock on Kurt at that time was that you have this phenomenal wrestler that just he didn't draw to the level of, I think, what he should have been. Like, here you have a legit Olympic gold medalist. He's a phenomenal talker, phenomenal worker. Mm-hmm. What's missing here? And it was, to me, it was just they'd come up with all these goofy ideas for him, and he would always just go along with them. And, you know, very entertaining in the role, but I just I didn't think it was the most effective way for this guy to be used.
Well, could very well be true.
Then they go to a segment that Keebler introduces about bad gimmicks over the years and weigh some of the gimmicks they profile. Kamala, IRS, Aldo Montoya, Quang, Jean-Pierre Lafitte, the pirate, Gilbert, Dean Douglas, Man Mountain Rock, Doink, Men on a Mission, Max Moon, Bertha Faye, the Berserker, Adam Bomb, the Oddities, Giant Gonzalez, Luna Vachon, the Bushwhackers, and Mantar. This was like a whole segment dedicated to our failures.
Yeah.
Very odd. And I would not classify some of these gimmicks as failures.
No, they had...
Kamala is like one of the most well-remembered characters that people associate with the WWF. Luna Vachon was in no way a failed gimmick.
Neither was Tatanka. Neither was Earthquake.
It's just like they found these, like, yeah, these gimmicks, you know, silly in hindsight if you didn't watch them, but like...
They could have put the Million Dollar Man in there.
You know, even to the point of, I mean, they were strictly comedy, but like, the Bushwhackers were, you know, a staple for some people.
Very memorable. Still
I can understand, like, Mantar and, you know, Quang, but this was just like... Let's just shit on all these performers.
Let's put Benny Hill music underneath anything that looks ridiculous in the common world.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
Then we go to moment number 9, Way. April the 19th of 1999.
What happened?
The Rock held a funeral for Steve Austin. And then Austin showed up in a monster truck and drove over the car of The Rock. And... I will almost bet that Austin actually did this himself.
Hmm. What do you mean? Oh, to drove the
truck over the car.
Sure. I'd believe it.
Which is insane.
Yeah, it is. I wonder what the insurance policy is on something like that.
I don't know either. Then Booker T comes out. He makes fun of Chris Jericho's outfit. And the award way is called the Tell Me I Did Not Just See That award.
Yes, what does that mean? What does this award mean?
You can't believe what you're seeing. You're in such an awe. You don't believe what reality is telling you via your vision.
We just had the Don't Try This at Home.
Well, this is Tell Me I Did Not Just See That.
Okay.
This is...
So this is...
One is dangerous, shocking. The other is just shock.
Shocking. I see.
Only four nominees, actually. We had the Three Faces of Foley.
Which is not even an
I don't
event.
Understand what the... Okay, it was Mick Foley...
It's a gimmick.
...changing his outfit.
Yeah.
Three times on one night.
It is shocking because they've never done it before at the time. It was shocking, but I thought this was supposed to be an event. This award was supposed to go to an event, not a gimmick.
Next up was The Hug... between Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff. And I'll totally agree that Eric Bischoff's debut was one of the legit surprises.
Absolutely.
In WWE history. The Hug, though, that would have been nominated for stupidest decision on Eric Bischoff's debut.
Why is that?
Why would you have McMahon and Bischoff hug?
For a shocking moment. Tell me I did not just see that moment.
Yeah, okay. The payoff is going to be a year and a half later when we have our anniversary show. I never understood why the two didn't feud coming in.
Hold on, but how would that make sense? If this was Vince McMahon bringing in Eric Bischoff as the GM.
Simple. You have SmackDown with Stephanie McMahon as the general manager, bringing in the one person that has defeated her father.
But Vince McMahon has employed Stephanie McMahon. What power does Stephanie have? to bring in Eric Bischoff.
Was that established at that point that Vince owned everything? Because there there was that point where he was the GM of one show, Flair was the GM of the other.
Yeah, and then he defeated Flair. He bought out Flair's stakes.
I'm just saying that creatively, isn't that a natural that you would have Vince and Bischoff feud? I would have worked in some angle where he somehow bought SmackDown.
But then who's the face?
I don't know.
Obviously, they wanted Eric Bischoff.
You'd probably have to put Vince in the babyface role in that spot.
I don't know.
I just thought, what's the point of bringing in Eric Bischoff if you're not going to play?
True. Yeah, for shock.
Why was that a shocking moment, the hug?
It was because the two have had legitimate feuds over.
It's like, what would the point have been if Bret Hart had shown up January the 4th and hugged Vince McMahon?
Sure.
What would the point of
that? That's true. I see.
We get a great moment, and then that's it.
Yeah, I get you.
That being said, that same night they did hug Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart.
Mm-hmm.
But what were you going to build to there? Anyway, number three, the Brawl for All way.
And again, like, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were both baby faces at the time.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, that segment to me with Bret and Shawn blew away the Bret and Vince segment at the end of the show that same night.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just because it felt more, like, real. Because you knew Vince and Bret had obviously worked this out to come back together. But Bret and Shawn, there was just a certain realness attached to that segment.
They had not seen each other, as you'll learn from watching the documentary, Bret Hart, Survival of the Hitman.
And then they had my biggest regret with that documentary was that we weren't rolling on Bret telling us what Shawn whispered into his ear when they hugged. And I will never say what he said because I'm so upset we didn't have that. That could have ended the documentary.
Yeah, only we'll know.
That's okay. The Brawl for All way. Tell me I did not just see that. Oh, shoot.
Tell me I did not just see this stupid idea.
Horrible idea that injured half the roster and some guys never returned from. Tell me I did not just see that. Tell me we did not spend 4 months building up to one of our guys winning this tournament and feeding him to a legitimate boxer.
Tell me we did not just
tell me I did not just book that. And then number four way, what the fuck was this? Kane Firestarter.
Yeah, some of these choices were just
Prodigy was needed on this.
So questionable.
What was it? Kane would just point at people and light them on fire.
At what point in our discussion, in anyone's discussion of professional wrestling, you know, when you talk to an old wrestling fan, people who don't watch wrestling anymore, and you reminisce about the good old days of pro wrestling, you talk about the beer truck, okay, fine. Zamboni, fine. Mick Foley falling off the cage, yeah, great. At what point in any discussion do you ever hear anybody ever bring up Kane lighting a man on fire?
They don't light people on fire like they used to. Back when it meant something.
I mean, yeah, okay, cool visual, but completely forgotten. Completely forgotten.
Maybe they had completely forgotten it until they were going back looking at video, found this, and this was the inspiration behind lighting Jim Ross on fire later that summer.
Sure.
So the winner of this was the Three Faces of Foley. Goldust comes out to assist Booker in giving out the award, and they note that Foley could not attend tonight. This took place in New York City. He lives in Long Island. How did he not show up for this?
He's writing. Busy writing.
Coachman asks Bischoff if he's disappointed that he lost the Tell Me I Didn't Just See That award. Bischoff, I must note, this was 7 years ago. He looked at least 15 years younger than he does now.
Yeah, it's the black hair, too.
He's put on some weight, too.
Sure.
He dresses around himself now.
He looks good for his age, though, whatever his age is.
That's fine, but I'm just saying from this Eric Bischoff 7 years ago.
Sure.
He's aged.
Yeah.
Then, speaking of looking 15 years younger, Ric Flair comes out, and they show Linda clapping for Ric Flair, and they do a tribute segment for those that have passed away over the course of the years. Andre the Giant, Joey Morella, Brian Pillman, Rick Rude, Owen Hart, Gorilla Monsoon, Yokozuna, and the British Bulldog. Now, as we will talk about when we get into our feedback, there were a lot more names that participated in the Raw years that passed away, but these were the ones they chose to focus on. Hmm. It was a nice segment to do.
It was very nice. They set it to a male-sung version of Tell Me a Lie.
Yes, the song that was used for Shawn Michaels' storyline, sure, where they teased his retirement.
It was a Jim Johnston pen piece.
Yeah, one of his finest original works.
Oh, I love that song. It's a very good song, and I thought this was a very classy and moving segment.
Then Chris Jericho comes out, just wearing this ridiculous, like, pleather getup, like, jacket, pants. Looked ridiculous.
Sure.
He cites Freddie Blassie, the Hollywood fashion plate, as the reason for his suit. And he's presenting the Gimme the Mic Award. Gimme the Mic! This is for underpushed talent that just wanted to cut a non-scripted promo.
It's yes. Actually, okay.
They know he originally goes to take the award, saying that he has won it and he is going to take this. But no, as he opens it up, he realizes that The Rock is the winner of the Gimme the Mic Award.
Was Jericho even nominated?
They didn't have nominees.
Oh,
they just announced The Rock.
Oh, okay.
Maybe they didn't want to put The Rock over other current talent by.
It just seemed like. I guess they just wanted an excuse to have The Rock on. So they, at the last minute, made up this award.
Gimme the Mic Award.
Yeah.
So The Rock then comes on the screen with a pre-tape where it says live from Hollywood via
Live
Saddle.
From the set of The Rundown.
Yes, The Rundown. There are very few times you will associate the word bomb with a Rock segment. This might be the closest.
This failed miserably. This was a pre-taped segment of The Rock interacting with Chris Jericho. Sure, they probably did a rehearsal beforehand, but at no point...
They're usually very good at these in an arena setting, but the crowd was just so flat here. The back and forth didn't work. The comedy by The Rock did not translate via satellite.
And this was a New York crowd, a very smart New
Who,
York crowd.
Yeah, they were starting to boo The Rock at the beginning of this.
They booed him at the very beginning, and the worst part is you don't have The Rock there reacting to the booing.
Yeah.
You have The Rock acting as if this audience still loves him, still taking his time, still doing his catchphrases that everybody was sick of at the time. Way too long. This video was way too long. It was like 5 minutes.
It was really long. And if you recall this time, The Rock was on a hiatus at this point, as you mentioned, doing the rundown. The prior year, I mean, booed out of the building at WrestleMania, booed out of the building at SummerSlam with the Brock Lesnar, and then he had taken time off since then. So
and did not update his gimmick at all. Was still doing the same catchphrases.
He was still doing all the catchphrases, but clearly they were aware. I think they at least were semi-aware of the reaction they would get because they were already kind of teasing Rock coming back, and he would come back as a heel. And he kind of alluded to this at the end when he said, I'm going to be coming back in about 4.5 weeks or something, and you have no idea what to expect when I get back.
Okay.
So, but you're right. First off, Barry's Kurt Angle refers to Haas and Benjamin and Angle as Team Suck Squad.
Yeah.
Team Suck Squad. Cut a promo on Stephanie McMahon.
Who's a babyface
your babyface general manager who got a promo cut on her for being a 10-cent whore.
Sure.
And she's just laughing like, oh, Rock.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice if she was a heel and you could see Stephanie's reaction to it, but Stephanie just, she probably felt conflicted about how to react in this situation because she knew that she had to play this babyface GM and she couldn't be angry at The Rock. That's not what a babyface would do.
Whether this was by design or not, it came across like Rock was like out of touch with the current product.
Yeah.
Here he is, as you said, in front of a New York crowd where you're, it's like he is too good to be here because he's in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Being a real star.
Yeah.
It's like just, now, it was just like a subtle heel move. And I almost guarantee they were fully aware Rock was coming back as a heel.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, he returned like a month later and was a heel right away.
And I think that was largely due to the reaction that he got in this very segment. This segment was just, to me, if they were going to do that, they wouldn't have done it at the expense of their program. Because this segment just felt way too, so long, like unbearably long, where Rock would take his dramatic pauses while the audience was just booing him.
They were chanting boring at one point.
Yeah.
Like Rock promos.
And it was boring.
Yeah, it was, I agree, not a great segment, and just didn't work here. Then we go to moment number 8, Way. It was the last night of Nitro and the simulcast that we have reviewed in the past. I watched this on a VHS.
See, hold on. Why wouldn't that moment be on the Tell Me I Didn't Just See That? Why wouldn't that moment be nominated for Tell Me I Didn't Just See That?
I guess they didn't want overlap on clips.
So that's why we had Kane.
Firestarter. Of all the moments in Raw history, like...
I guess it makes more sense if you've already reserved all those other moments for the top moments in Raw history.
As I mentioned, I watched this on a VHS of the actual broadcast when it aired, and I did not cut out the commercials. And after moment number 8, they went to a 10-10-220 commercial. Remember when those were the all the rage?
I don't think we ever used those in Canada.
It was free long-distance calls by dialing 10-10-220, and this commercial featured Hulk Hogan doing, like, Pilates or something with Terry Bradshaw. It was very weird. Then we come back from the break, and Howard Finkel is outside on the street. They didn't even let this man inside, and he threw back to the hosts.
Okay.
Just poor Howard Finkel.
Well, at least he got some TV time.
That's what we always say. So, at least the guy got 30 seconds on there. Like, fuck. Guy doesn't warrant anything more than that. What does he do now?
What does he do now? Exactly. I mean, does he even deserve to be employed by the company?
Oh, I wish like an MMA promotion could grab him.
No.
I know he's so ingrained. No, I'm not saying UFC. Why would they? Even Strikeforce probably wouldn't. But just for, to me, that would be, I would tune into an Impact FC if Howard Finkel was doing the, I just think he's fantastic.
Yeah, he's
And the
great.
Fact he's attached to professional wrestling is somehow like a knock against him.
But he's just so attached to professional wrestling and, it's the same problem with Jim Ross. Why Jim Ross wouldn't get a fair shake at doing MMA? It's because his voice and his persona is so attached to pro wrestling that no matter the moment that you start using him for an MMA show, you're automatically going to get those comparisons.
We go to Michael Cole and Taz come out, and Jesus, Michael Cole like looked 14 here.
Yeah, Michael Cole, you can tell, has definitely been lifting more weights.
Or eating some donuts, dude. He doesn't look, like, ripped.
I think I don't know.
There's some pictures of him on a fishing trip with Shawn Michaels that someone posted, and he's looking like a whale.
Okay.
Catching fish. there were chants of ECW for Taz, and all I noted here was there was some bad comedy writing here between the two. I don't know what they wrote.
I didn't know it anyway.
This is for best on-screen duo / Shut Up and Kiss Me.
Okay.
Nominee number 1, Mark Henry and Mae Young.
Mm-hmm.
What a great storyline this was.
Yeah.
They showed some clips of the two together.
From
GTV, the mysterious GTV that never was revealed.
Never. There were rumors that it was supposed to be a number of things. There were rumors that it was supposed to be Tom Green for Green TV.
It started out as GDTV for Goldust.
That's right.
Never went to him. I think it was Vince Russo who wrote about it in his book of who it was going to be intended for. I think originally it was Goldust. He left the company and they kept doing it. And it never went anywhere. China and Eddie Guerrero. And this was funny, Way, because first off, the vignettes these two did, I thought this was the most over China ever was when she was paired with Eddie Guerrero. Like, Eddie just, like, was awesome in some of these vignettes, like going to the Playboy Mansion and trying to stop the magazine from being printed. The two ended up doing a breakup angle where GTV, once again, revealed him coming out of a shower and then two women popping their heads out from the shower. And one of them was Victoria. Mm-hmm. And at this point, she was just being used as random girl.
One of Godfather's hoes.
Yeah. But in this, obviously at this time period, she's like one of the main women. So when they showed the ankle, they blurred her face.
Oh.
It's very funny.
That's excellent.
Nominee number 3, Lita and Matt Hardy. And then nominee number 4, Vince McMahon and William Regal, where they got to replay the Kiss My Ass angle where Regal kissed Vince's ass.
Yeah, Regal and Vince's ass. These are the last couple.
That was, to me, I will say the most embarrassed I've ever been as a wrestling fan. It went on for a month, the Kiss My Ass. I'll tell you why. It was not that week, but I think maybe the following week or something. They were in Oklahoma City, and they did the angle where Jim Ross had to kiss Vince's ass. And I lived at home at the time, and I'm watching Raw, and my mom walks in, and all of a sudden, Vince McMahon pulls his pants down, throws his ass into Jim Ross's face, and then he puts on Jim Ross's cowboy hat and is like scooting around the ring with his ass hanging out. And my mom just thought it was like the stupidest shit ever. Like, I think my mom's respect for me has never been what it was before that angle. I think in the back of her head, whenever she hears I do pro wrestling as part of my job, that has to go into her head. Do you have any funny stories about your parents walking in on some just atrocious wrestling angle or something that you just have to bury your head and be like, I'm sorry?
No, nothing quite like that. I think my parents were always just horrified at the perceived violence. But they wouldn't be horrified at, you know, any crazy chair shots or anything like that. Just a simple stomp to a guy on the ground scares them. They're like, "What? Wow, what's this? This is so violent. He hit the back of his head. Oh no, he hurt the back of his head. Oh, that's terrible."
I think I've told this story before about when Matt and Jeff Hardy were feuding, and it was at a December pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And I was watching the pay-per-view with like some friends or something, and my dad was downstairs, and they're doing the video package right before their match, and they're going back and forth, and mm-hmm. my dad's just like, "That's horrible. Two brothers fighting right around Christmas time."
I love it.
Best comment ever for a wrestling match.
Our parents are such marks.
We need to do a review with our parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Review a Way Senior.
No.
I don't know.
No, stop. Stop it.
Keep going. You're very sensitive on the family front. It's very...
I just hate these puns. Enough.
Nominee number 5, Way. Triple H and Stephanie. I will say, very good video package, I thought. The Triple H and Stephanie they had. Mm-hmm. It was like it encompassed the entire feud. It was Stephanie and Soundbites is very tolerable.
Yeah. She has good delivery. I like her delivery.
Yep. So the winners of this, Triple H and Stephanie, and this was all designed to put Triple H and Stephanie on a stage together because in storyline they had been divorced. Stephanie was on SmackDown as the GM. Triple H was the top star on Raw and they didn't have any interaction. So they get up on stage and it's very awkward. Then Stephanie, tongue in cheek, runs down their entire storyline history, which if you did not catch our review of South Park, the wrestling episode, this was verbatim what they were trying to accomplish. It was just like, "Well, first I was drugged on my wedding night and then impregnated," and it's just, she went through everything.
I've had 4 weddings crashed. Four weddings.
Hilarious.
Is that true?
Four weddings? Well, there was obviously the one with Test, yep. The famous one.
One with Hunter before WrestleMania 18.
Yeah, they showed that in the video clip. What other weddings has she been a part of?
Did she try to
make remember when she was kidnapped by the Undertaker and they were going to do the dark wedding and that was the higher power angle?
Yeah.
I love that higher power angle. I thought it was so cool at the time, just of who this mystery person is. Under this hood, and then it turned out to be Vince McMahon. I was like, oh, that sucked.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know what the fourth wedding is. If anyone has can fill in the blank for us, that'd be fantastic. So Hunter says, you know, for old time's sake, how about we kiss? Close your eyes. It's like, oh, fuck off. Where is this going? Triple H.
And then John Pollock's mom walks in.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Triple H pulls his pants down, like right down, and then bends over, sticking his ass at Stephanie, who then slaps his ass. The fuck was this?
We, in the span of 3 minutes, we got to see Vince McMahon's bare ass, and then
Hunter's bare ass.
Triple H's bare, tanned, muscular ass.
This was WWE in 2003, folks. And this, my one major criticism at the time was like their 2003 through 2005 product was they still wanted to be edgy, but it was like that era had so clearly passed where it's like being edgy was not edgy anymore. It was being cliche.
You're not shocking anyone.
Anymore. Not at all. Like in 98 and 99. That worked, even into 2000. But after that, it's like, okay, we've seen everything now. It's like that era, it wasn't just WWF doing it. It was like so much, like whether you looked at like TV or radio, it was all just, you know, pushing the envelope so far that it was like no one cared anymore.
No.
And it was just like grasping at straws. And the fact that the product was super cold in 2003, I thought, like from a, you know, just business perspective, that they were just throwing shit out. That's why I am not that much. People get so on the WWE for being PG now. It doesn't bother me. You could be very good as PG. I don't think anyone goes back and says, oh, the fucking 80s sucked for the WWF. They were all PG. It's done well. It was done very well. It's just, you know, PG, it can be fine. It's just sometimes it's done shitty. Some people, I think, just associate PG with like insulting your audience, and it doesn't have to be.
I agree. I think whatever is good for business, right?
Absolutely. But it's also about the purity of the sport, too. Okay, so we go to moment number 7, Way. Debut of Mr. Socko from October the 5th, 1998. This was a fun segment when it happened. Then Gene Okerlund and Pat Patterson come out, and they're presenting the Network Difficulties Award. Network Difficulties Way. And we have our nominees are Mae Young giving birth to a hand, Steve Austin stunning Santa Claus. Was Bonnie Hammer or Barry Diller really calling up Vince and saying you can't stun Santa Claus? Like the other three nominees, I will at least there is obviously credence to it. Number 3 was Hot Lesbian Action, where two girls made out in the ring together, and then 3-minute warning came in and destroyed these women. Like,
legitimately.
Yeah. Like, these Caval beat down times 10.
These lesbians actually got injured in this beatdown.
One of them I recognized. She was a UPW student. She was in that Discovery Channel did a special on, I think her name was Looney Lane or something like that. Anyway, she was one of the women here. And then nominee number 4 was the Steve Austin, Brian Pillman gun angle. And I know some people were very offended when this angle occurred. I thought it was great.
Yeah, very well executed.
How old would we have been in 97? 13? Mm-hmm. I mean, Jesus, where Austin comes in, Pillman's holding the gun, and they lose the reception. I don't know. Some people really panned it. I thought it was great at the time.
Yeah.
But no, your winner. Yeah, sorry. The winner is Mae Young giving birth to a hand.
Mm-hmm. Mae Young has been nominated 3 times for a Raw Ruckus Award.
First win.
Finally, she wins.
She gets up there, is just going off on nonsense, and they just cue the music and get out of there. So Mae Young gets your award. Then we go to moment number six, Way the Nation parody by DX on July the 6th of 1998. And that's all there. And then we come back, Way, for my highlight of this show. Brock Lesnar's music comes out. He enters in a suit, and he does his little Brock Lesnar jig on the stage. And it looked so forced and so fake, pronounced even more by how you know Brock Lesnar is the real person nowadays. Mm-hmm. How he must have hated doing this stupid little fucking dance where he goes on one foot, goes on the other. It looked hilarious. Yeah, just hilarious.
This guy looked like a baby here.
He really did. Well, a jacked up baby. He's presenting the Superstar of the Decade Award. Your nominees are Mick Foley, not here. The Rock, not here. Bret Hart, not here. Triple H, Steve Austin, not there. And The Undertaker, not there. One nominee has shown up for the Superstar of the Year Award, Way. I don't know about you. I would have changed. I guess you had the nominee, these six. I don't know who else really stands out. Maybe Kurt Angle.
Shawn Michaels.
Yep. Shawn should have been in there for sure. I would have taken out Foley if he wasn't there. You could have taken out Brett. Fact was, he wasn't going to be there. The Undertaker was like selling an angle. He's actually, they were building to his return at the pay-per-view that Sunday, so he couldn't have appeared. Steve Austin wins the award, who definitely, to me, was the person you would have to pick.
As yeah.
The person most that you attribute the success of that show to, it's him.
Look at the top 10 moments. Most of them feature Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Vince McMahon comes out to accept. You hear chants of "We want Austin." And Vince says he has a very good reason for not being here. He says he wasn't invited. And this was, of course, to build up to Austin eventually returning. And
what was the legit reason?
After he had walked out.
Was he still on the outs with the company at the time?
I think they had agreed. By the time this happened, they knew he was coming back. He returned like 3 weeks after this award show. Mm-hmm. So that was all being set up for him to return. So they had worked out their problems. But this was stemming from his leaving after that Brock Lesnar match was booked.
Yeah. Brock Lesnar in this presenting this award just looks so nervous.
He's also a babyface at this time, which did not work for him, I thought. I never liked him as a babyface.
Yeah, but he just looks so different from the way that he carries himself these days.
Hunter is interviewed about losing, and he's upset, and he leaves with Ric Flair. Moment number five, Mike Tyson and Steve Austin from January the 19th of 1998. That was a great moment in Raw history.
Monday Night Wars history.
I don't think we had Raw live at that point in Canada. And the next day, I think I was at a friend's house or something, and I was getting a ride home, and whatever radio station we were on was discussing the angle from the night before.
Really?
It was like The Fan or something. And that was the first time I think I had seriously heard wrestling, like an angle discussed, like Mike Tyson showing up on Raw and fighting with Steve Austin. It was like, that was to me the first point where I realized, like, wrestling was like emerging in terms of, like, it was about to explode with this whole Mike Tyson angle. So
absolutely,
that was one thing I recall from that. Then they run down, it's the nominees for the greatest matches in Raw history. And your nominees are TLC from 2002 that Kane won, Triple H versus Cactus Jack from September of 97, The Undertaker versus Jeff Hardy from 2002, and Kane versus Steve Austin from 1998.
What?
I'm sorry. Did Kevin Sullivan just walk past us? Who was that?
I don't know who that was.
He waved to you.
He probably just waved to say hi. It was not Kevin Sullivan.
That guy looked like Kevin Sullivan.
No, he didn't. Not to me.
Okay.
This list. Some of these are good, sure, but best of the decade?
Where was that Angle Benoit match?
This is the best you could come up with? Kane versus Stone Cold from 1998. The best match of the decade. Even TLC 4, okay, yeah, sure, it was a good match, but it was the weakest of the TLCs. And the Taker-Jeff Hardy match, it was great for Undertaker match, sure, but
I watched that match, and everyone went mental about that match, and I saw it, and I was like, Okay.
Yeah. I personally think it was only good because we had never seen Undertaker in that light, and he did well. But there's so many better matches.
Yeah, there was...
What about that Benoit, Jericho versus Austin and Triple H tag team?
Oh, Jesus.
Triple H tore his quad.
That was a phenomenal match. There was... That one week where Austin and Benoit did a match on Raw and SmackDown, like in Calgary and Edmonton. Yeah. And both were... the SmackDown match especially was just... Holy Christ. Yeah, some weird choices here.
Kane is on two of these.
Kane is in two of your best of matches.
Of the decade.
Wow. Even Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty had a phenomenal match in the earlier days. Bret Hart and the 1-2-3 Kid had a really, really solid match.
Yeah.
I'd have to obviously go back and look at other matches we're probably forgetting, but just there right off the top of your head. I would, if you put a gun to my head right now, I would pick that San Jose tag match with Austin and Hunter against Jericho and Benoit. The crowd, the match, even just the deal at the end with the injury. And Hunter gutting it out there, like that's just a phenomenal match. That would probably be my pick, and not even nominated here. And what sense does that make? All the guys are there.
Yeah.
Anyway, match went to TLC 2002, and the guys got up on the stage. Jericho and Christian rushed the stage and fought over the award. This is when these two were booked like just goofs, like ridiculous. Then Kane he's wearing his mask and this like black outfit.
He had his hair in a ponytail.
He looked horrible.
Kane in his streetwear.
Oh, my God. At least, you know, unmasking, he could like get rid of the hair and he look half normal in public, whereas here it's just like, my God, he looked like some homeless man. Bubba Ray gives a good speech, putting over Edge, Matt Hardy, Devon, and Benoit, who aren't on the stage with them, as revolutionizing the TLC match. Then RVD, when everyone had left, did this like cocky speech where you could not help but hate this guy. After this speech, like, very,
Yeah, he's just like, now that everybody's gone, we can all,
pay tribute
to the man that everybody loves, Rob Van Dam. And the music guy was there ready with a music hit and just hit the music there. Maybe that was written in because of the music.
Moment number four way, DX invades WCW Monday Nitro, April the 27th of 1998. A pretty impactful angle at the time. Like, that was just something you would never have imagined doing.
I would love to see a Nitro 10th anniversary and then see what moments that they would list.
Yep. No, they'd have a 4-year gap at the end. They go to break. They come back with moment number three, and it was The Rock and Hogan doing their stare down to set up WrestleMania. This was a phenomenal segment.
Yes,
In hindsight,
it was fantastic.
I recall, like I had WrestleMania tickets like went on sale like the prior fall, so it was like you bought your tickets not knowing what you were gonna get. So me and my friends had all gotten tickets for this to go together. And when this segment happened, I was like, fuck, man. Like, this is going to be a solid, solid angle leading into this. And in hindsight, it was a really good one segment. And then, like, in the very next segment, Hogan, like, got into, like, some truck and murdered The Rock, who came back fine. It was really stupid, actually.
They tend to do that. I think
this segment alone was solid. If you had just left this,
see, but you can't do that. You can't do that if you're making hours of TV every single week, then you have to spike ratings all the time.
That being said, you didn't need to run a guy over in a semi.
It's like, to fill time, they always resort to cars. They always resort to
vehicles.
Car
need to
angles.
Be banned in wrestling angles. You know what? We did the half-hearted segment or contest this past Monday on review or on Tuesday for a review of Raw. The Did You Knows. I want people to contribute to the board this week. When has a car led to a successful angle where the car has played an impact in the angle? And even if it hasn't, share with us your memories of where a car has destroyed a storyline, because that we're going to get a lot more responses for. When has a vehicle been successful or unsuccessful in wrestling? And give us your opinions on vehicles in pro wrestling.
Any auto collision, any type of auto accident.
Just this year alone with Bret Hart and his cars. Oh, I never want to see one again. We'll call this the Hummer Contest.
And what do people win?
A toy car. They'll win something. We'll send you something.
Mystery prize.
Yes. They then showed Freddie Blassie in attendance at the World. Then they go to moment number two, and it's the Raw is Owen special from May 24th, 1999. And they just kind of recap the event. They show clips of everyone's speeches. This is weird. I thought this should maybe have just been a segment unto its own, like play tribute to it. But in terms of the top 10 moments,
the second greatest moment in Raw history.
Like, that's what they built this as, the 10 greatest moments. This was not a great moment. This was a terribly tragic moment.
It was very weird. It's like naming a funeral as a, wow, do you remember that great time when we went to this guy's funeral?
Yeah, this should have been like the tribute segment
that
Ric Flair introduced. It should have, like, I'm perfectly fine with them bringing it up and acknowledging it, but
no doubt it was one of the most memorable pieces of television.
Yeah, but you can't compare that Raw to any other episode. Exactly. It wasn't Raw for all intents and purposes.
In this context, it just seemed wrong. Like, I mean, would they ever put the September 11th edition of SmackDown as one of the greatest moments in SmackDown history?
They might have, actually. And a little thing on top of this, like, they also did that for when Brian Pillman died the next day.
Yeah.
It's like, what was that? Was he not as important that he didn't deserve a moment or anything like that? I don't know. I just...
Yeah.
And that night, to me, was one of the most terrible, disgusting nights in WWE history with that, wife.
Coming up, we'll get to talk to Brian's widow.
Via satellite. Ugh. That was just made me vomit.
Fucked up. Martha wouldn't have been happy about that.
No. They go to break and then come back with Coachman and Stacy Keibler, who introduce Edge, who puts over all of the voting online and introduces the number one moment in Raw history. And it's Steve Austin coming out with a beer truck on March the 22nd, 1999. As the final segment on Raw going into WrestleMania and hosing Vince, Shane, and The Rock with beer.
Yes. I don't know what it is about this particular segment that sticks in everyone's mind so much, but even for me, when you talk about the most memorable visual from that whole era, it may as well be this beer truck incident.
It may be. I mean, it's a very famous segment just because of how much they've replayed it. I mean, at the time I watched it, and it wasn't like I turned off saying, wow, that was the greatest moment ever. It was just, okay, it was an angle. Like, what separated this from, like, the Zamboni and the monster truck and the milk segment?
Yeah, I can't think of it, but yet everybody remembers this.
So this kind of, it was your top star at a peak period for the company. And I guess that was the impetus for it. So then Edge brings up all of the talent onto the stage. They turn around and says that we want to thank the number one superstars in the history of Raw, you the fans. Everyone gets on stage and they clap.
Oh my God.
For the fans. This was the corniest finish to a WWE program ever.
Heels and faces. And it was at this moment that I realized why Triple H had left earlier in the show.
Oh, Jesus.
Didn't want to be a part of this corny clapping on in front of the stage.
Guaranteed that's why he did that.
Yeah.
Guaranteed. So funny, man. Wrestling is so hilarious. It's like, no one gives a shit anymore. Like, about that kind of stuff. But this was, it was just so corny at the end. And Edge at this time, man, oh, I could not stand him as a babyface.
They were pushing him hard. They had him introduce the final award of the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They clearly had their sights set on him to carry the company at some point as a babyface. But, nah, it didn't really work out that way.
All right, so that was the 10th anniversary of Raw. A quick ranking out of 10 way. I'll give this a 4.
I'll give it a 6. It was an entertaining show. It was nostalgic. Nothing very heavy or significant about it. It was definitely better than the 900
celebration. Oh, it blew it away. You're right. I give it a 5 just thinking of the 900th episode of Raw.
Yeah, I mean, for any type of celebration... 900th
episode of Raw, to me, was a 0.
Yeah, for any type of celebration, you're really just banking on the nostalgic aspect of those 900 episodes or however many episodes. And this provided that.
This, to me... Monday's show, the 900th episode, it left me with a feeling at the end of the show that this company is so concerned about their own legacy, and it's like they almost question it themselves, that this insecure company that feels the need to take pot shots at people, to put themselves over and over and over, and it drove me nuts. Mm-hmm. Whereas this show, I didn't get that feeling from it, but I also got the feeling that, you know, we had all these huge stars, none of whom even bothered to show up for this thing tonight.
Sure.
And it was just like, okay, we have stars now, but it's like the big names have all moved on.
Yeah, they're no... Exactly. If you even look at the greatest moments in Raw history, they're all from that 98 to early 2000 period.
Yeah.
All the big stars were there. And even look at the episode from this past Monday. How many real moments over the past 8 years stack up to anything that took place in that boom?
They did put some clips on this past week, like the Nexus angle.
Yeah, but they really forced it. I mean, in your mind, do any of those moments really stack up to This Is Your Life segment?
Well, I think a lot of segments kind of gain that in time. Like, you look back and it was like, oh, This Is Your Life was this legendary segment. I really do believe that, like, 5 years from now, we'll still remember that Nexus attack.
Sure.
I thought that was just, in any year, that was a fantastic angle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are more apt to dismiss stuff as it happens right now.
Yeah.
Where there was stuff in 2003 that I guarantee people shit on, that now they look back and it was legendary. You know what I mean? I find that, especially in wrestling, that happens so often.
I just personally find it tough to think back. Even that Randy Orton Triple H home invasion thing. I mean, they presented
that sucked.
Yeah, they presented that as one of the greatest moments over the past 15 years.
Yeah, that was a horrible, horrible segment. All right, well, let's get into the feedback way. There is about 8,000 pages here of feedback to get to. Let's start off with Aram Nasrallah. Hey, fellas, I remember WWE original CD/DVD very much, since a couple of years ago I was working at a music store in Denmark, and the first thing I ever did when I was told we could order all sorts of albums for the store was getting originals, along with John Cena's album and other crappy WWE albums. My boss was very unhappy and said what was that piece of crap I had just ordered, and that I had to buy them myself if I couldn't get it sold. Joke was on them, since I made sure we had to write them down in the price so I could get them very cheap and make sure they didn't get a profit of it. Anyway, hope that you will review the first WWF VHS I bought, In Your House 5, with matches such as Ahmed Johnson versus The Nature Boy. I think he means Buddy Landell. And the first ever Hogpen match. It's only 2 hours long, and it's easy to watch for you guys. P.S. Hope that the Vladimir interview will happen sometime, and that don't give a fuck about those Jersey Shore haters. You can review all sorts of shit, and we will be listening. Well, thanks, Aram, and that's a great story about ordering originals.
Joke is on them. So I'm assuming he actually bought the CDs for himself afterwards?
I guess so.
So who's the joke really on?
I don't know.
Matt Cruz. Hey, guys. I watched Road Wild 98 after you reviewed it last week. Man, that Mongo versus Adams match was the shits. I couldn't stop laughing. Keep up the good work.
Brian Hillhouse. Because I listen to the show religiously on my MP3 player while at work, I made this topic about the best moments from the show. I'll just name two, although there are many. Number one. way jumping on John when he talks about friends he had when he was younger. I know it happened at least twice. John started by saying, me and a friend of mine, and Way without hesitation jumped in and asked, who? What was his name? Almost like Way was saying, bullshit, you never had any friends.
I don't remember doing that at all.
I don't either, but maybe it happened. And number two, what are you talking about?
No, you gotta do it in the proper voice.
I don't know what voice.
This is the Sid voice.
Oh! Well, I can't do it now because everyone wants to, they're expecting it. Much respect for John admitting he liked NSYNC's music. At my age, I am more of a New Kids on the Block fan and even went to 5 of their concerts on their recent comeback tour. Okay, this was one tour he saw 5 shows of. Thousands of scantily clad horny women with me. It was awesome. Yokozuna.
Yeah, I'm sure, he did pretty well for himself with these scantily clad 12-year-olds. At 5 NSYNC concerts. Wow.
New Kids on the Block.
Oh, sorry. Jay Hunter. Hey, guys. Great review of WWE Originals this week. Did you notice that most of the songs have I, me, or we in the title? Like, I just want you. I don't suck. We've had enough, etc. Just found it a bit odd. John, reading out those horrible lyrics was hilarious. I remember Bubba saying that all he wants is their track to be better than Jericho's. Lead in Trisha's tracks reminded me of Ashley Mazzaro's awful song. And then he puts on the lyrics, you better hold on tight, cause I won't love you nice. I'm gonna do it right. Let me light a fire in you tonight. The rap contest had me crying with laughter. It was so funny. Anyway, I went to see Fozzy in October 2005 in Dublin. They played Don't You Wish You Were Me. It was great. Oh, they actually played that song live. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
It was great, as was the concert, all for about 300 Irish folk. Jericho is not the best singer, but he certainly gives it socks. That's what it says.
I know.
And whips the crowd into a frenzy. I also remember the t-shirt I bought. The silver Fozzy logo flaked after the first wash and was unbearable.
Unwearable.
Unwearable. So, my mistake. Cowboys, John. Cowboys. I don't know. What does that mean?
I don't get that reference.
But with t-shirts, I never have a problem with t-shirts flaking. I always wash them inside out. Simple as that.
That's a great lesson that they've learned now. Carlo Rossi, hey guys, thanks for liking my R-Truth rap rewrite. I have finally been named on your show. I'm hardcore. On a more serious note, have you guys ever thought about reviewing Beyond the Mat? I think it would be interesting to hear your take on a documentary about wrestling as much as it is entertaining to hear your pay-per-view reviews. Keep up the great work. My problem is I've seen Beyond the Mat so many times, I have no desire to watch it again right now.
Yeah, and plus, it would just be us talking about how much we like it, probably.
That's the thing. Like, Beyond the Mat's a very, very good documentary. It'd be like reviewing Hitman Hard or something. Like, yeah. You know.
I don't know. Scott McCullough, the R-Truth rap contest had me in tears. Very good work by everyone. As for the 10-year anniversary Raw show, R-A-W show, can't wait to hear it. Oh. I thought he was talking about, like, the 10-year review away. Oh. Anniversary. No.
Coming up in 9 years.
What show that lasted 10 years or more would you consider the worst on television? For me, it's King of the Hill. God, I hated that show.
Oh, shows that have been around for at least 10 years
that
you hate.
Kings of the Hill.
I really liked King of the Hill when it first started. I watched it, but then fell out of it and would definitely never watch it now. God, I'm trying to think because, like,
I don't watch a lot of.
Neither do I. Like,
on TV.
All the shows I watch are all really like newer stuff. Like I watch. I watch Mad Men. Yeah. I still watch Entourage, though. It's the last two seasons were shit, and this one's at least picking up a bit.
But
10-year-old shows. There aren't that many shows that have been around for 10 years. Like that's a pretty select.
You mean that are still on at the moment?
I think that's what he asked. Yeah.
But yeah, even like a Seinfeld only lasted, what, like 7 years? Let's think about
it. Or you just said any show that lasted 10 years or more.
Oh, maybe The Tonight Show with Jay Leno.
about yep. that?
Yeah, that franchise has been around since.
I didn't even like forever. It when Conan. I didn't even like it when Conan was the host.
I didn't think it was great with Conan. Either.
I thought Conan was just so watered down, and it was not like.
Yeah, it didn't work for me either. I mean, he had a good first show, and he had a good last show. No, that last like 3 weeks. Was
oh yeah,
pretty
that
good
was, that
because
was,
every night was just because
he didn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was well done. So to not answer your question, Scott, we really don't know too many shows that have been around for 10 years or more that we hated. Jack Pisco, to DJ Jopo and Wu Ting, your street cred has dramatically increased. Your review of originals was all right, but honestly, what made the show was the R-Truth Lyric Contest. Best shit I've heard on this podcast so far. Great job.
Thank you, and thank you everybody who submitted. It was a very, very good song.
It was a great idea on your behalf, Way.
Well, thank you. Paul Alexander Lopez Luis. Hey, Review Away crew, you did a terrific job with the R-Truth Rap Contest. It wasn't easy to not laugh at my job. It's been a couple of minutes that I have signed to your Facebook page, and the picture sections are hilarious. I don't want to disturb you too much about it, since everyone got a request of some kind, but I heard that Macho Man Randy Savage released a rap album a few years ago. Personally, a review of a few of his songs has a lot of potential for your show. I can't wait for the next show. I'm hooked. Keep up the good work. And then also, I hope you read my stuff for the next Monday, and you even got a French-Canadian fan from Quebec City. Merci beaucoup. Brackets. Thanks a lot.
I'm glad he translated it for us. Merci beaucoup is one of those French words that we have no idea what it translates to.
The Macho Man CD, sure, yeah, eventually. If Macho Man becomes newsworthy. Sure.
Relevant again.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the interview Lanny Poffo did a few weeks ago?
No.
Where someone asked him about the reason Savage isn't working with the WWE or involved with any of them. And I didn't hear this. I just read the recap.
Yeah.
And Lanny's like, well, if you Google it, you can find out the reasons why. Or so he said something to that effect.
Okay.
Where it was like,
did you Google it?
I didn't Google it, but it's like, obviously the story is out there. And it was not Lanny Poffo denying it.
So what's the story?
You've never heard the story of Randy and...
Oh, and Stephanie?
The alleged relations between the two.
It doesn't necessarily mean that.
I'm not saying it necessarily means that, but I'm just saying his brother, obviously everyone knows that
maybe,
rumor. It's
maybe
like,
he means Google it, and you'll find that he released an embarrassing rap album, and he can't show his face on TV again.
That could be it. That could be true. Richard Lee, wow, I really think I wasn't going to win that one, but thank you, and can't wait to hear from you guys on Tuesday. Anyway, the original CD was what I expected, proving that wrestlers really shouldn't be musicians, with the exception of Chris Jericho, who of course is a fellow Winnipeg native. I remember having an old vinyl copy of the first two wrestling albums from the Fed back in the mid-80s. Man, I feel old mentioning that. Anyway, can't wait for the review of Raw, the next week's show on the 10th anniversary from 03. Anyway, back to the lyric contest. I really thought that Jack Pisco's and a couple of others were great. But again, thank you, and to think that this was entirely written and posted from my BlackBerry. One last line. Peace out, homies, as only a 31-year-old white guy can say it. DJ 2112, also known as the artist formerly known as Richard Lee. Kidding.
Have we picked a prize for DJ 2112?
Oh, no, we didn't. We really should, I guess. You're in charge of finding a prize.
All right.
This is your contest.
Mark Cardoso. Hey, John and Way. I actually gave my friend the WWE original CD for Christmas with Santa with Muscles a couple years ago. Giant Tiger had the lots of copies of the CD, along with another WWE themes music CD that featured Triple H's Kings of Kings theme and a random track that would end up being CM Punk's theme. That was, that was one of those.
Yep. Robert McNulty. Hey guys, enjoyed the show this week. Listening to you both spinning rhymes had me in bits. Comedy gold. Way reminded me of a young Vanilla Ice. Word. Just wondering, since Raw most of the time is boring, did you ever think of reviewing the odd episode of Impact? I've only started watching it again, and I have to say, Ric Flair's promos make it must-see. From hitting himself to hitting on sultry Dixie Carter to impersonating Cactus Jack, have me on the edge of my seat waiting to see what that crazy old man will do next. Anyway, as always, love the show. Keep up the good work. P.S. Thanks for reading out my previous posts. Made my day. I don't know. There's quite a lot going on every week.
Yeah. What was the question? What was the
about reviewing Impact.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see. We got this. We're busy on Thursdays with the Jersey Shore. Nate Milton, hold on, guys. We forgive the WWE for their musical abortion, yet we bang on TNA for putting some trick with more mainstream recognition than half their roster on their show. Also, it's one thing to mock Rush, but Uncle L is a Hall of Famer, literally.
Who's Uncle L?
I think LL Cool J.
Oh, Jesus. LL Cool J.
He's a Hall of Famer.
How? From, so is Coco Beware.
From him, I don't know if it's the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or Hip Hop Hall of Fame. He is a legend. His longevity is unmatched.
He put out an album calling himself the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
I'm just not a fan of LL Cool J.
Okay.
When has an opinion been restricted? I don't find any of his songs. His lyrics are just ridiculous.
Okay.
We go next to Kyle Harding. More Jersey Shore references from Jericho's Twitter. Jericho wrote, On my way to the Jersey Shore. I've never fist pumped in my life and don't intend to, but this GTL thing is intriguing. Then the next day he wrote, leaving the Jersey Shore. No gym, no tan, no laundry, no snooky. Only cheap hotels, bad traffic, and a restaurant named Stinky's. Y2JWoww out.
Rude Klassen. I know you guys probably already recorded this week's review of Raw, but I'd have to say that the Jersey Shore has been pretty awful the last 2 weeks, and that's coming from a JS fan. Sammy is probably the dumbest girl ever, and her daily have a nice life breakup with Ronnie is starting to get lame. That's funny. That's funny because we exactly talked about this.
Yeah.
We didn't even get a silly snooky or situation skit. Here's to hoping the next few weeks will be better.
Yeah, I agree. The have a nice life breakup with Ronnie. Yeah. We also didn't get into that whole thing last week of the guys bringing those girls over and isolating them all. It was quite the plan on their part.
Okay, I suppose so. Quite the plan, yes.
Taking advantage of drunk girls.
Yeah, and then the situation begins to refer to one of them, the ugly one, as a hippo.
A hippopotamus. All right, let's keep going here. Travers Cummings. Well, that might have been the best review away of the year so far. All those horrible raps at the end was great, especially when the song cut out twice just as Way was about to start. Just a side note to the people on here, I may not be the greatest speller in the world, but for God's sakes, fix your run-on sentences.
Yes, thank
Word.
You. Word. Stephen M. Jensen, did you know Monday Night Raw has actually missed the following Mondays?
Okay, he lists 21 Mondays if you don't want to go through them all.
He lists 21 dates, and then says, as you see, Raw actually has missed 21 Mondays over the course of 17 years. Hardly consecutive. I am pretty sure this is all of them. If anyone has something different, please comment. Thanks.
I knew that they had missed Mondays, but I did not have dates at my disposal. So I was very glad that Steven sent this in for us to actually see all the Mondays they have missed. They lied on TV.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. We always... I'm sure
they'll apologize at the start of next week's
I'm sure
Monday.
They will. I'm sorry. Michael Cole will apologize to the internet.
Richard Lee, did you know that Raw still has a long way to go to beat the records of shows like General Hospital, The Price is Right, and Doctor Who? Great review of Raw. Didn't catch it, but your synopsis got... Okay, so you didn't catch Raw. I thought you didn't listen to the show. Didn't catch it, but your synopsis got me caught up. Now, about that musical-related prize for winning the rap contest.
Scott Malcolm Morton. Hey, guys, just listen to the latest review away of the WWE Originals, and just wanted to let you know that the album is available on iTunes for $9.99. Just searched it because I was bored. It's also available for $0 if you just Google.
Joseph Bernard, this week's review of Raw was excellent as always. Not sure if the other listeners are with me, but what I truly love about what you're doing is that it allows me to skip the actual show on Monday nights and listen to your rundown on my iPod at work the next day. went and watched the entire first season of The Jersey Shore and found it infinitely more entertaining than the recent Raw and SmackDown episodes. Keep up the wrestling-tinged Jersey Shore reviews.
Daniel Markey, hey guys, got to agree, Raw was disappointing. I was expecting a lot and got nothing. I was thinking a few old faces and some cross-promotion matches, but pretty much got nothing. Line of the night was CM Punk yelling in Big Show's face, "You're not funny and nobody likes you." Laughed my ass off. By the way, I heard the situation is going to be on the next season of Dancing with the Stars. Will you watch and how far will he go? I will not watch.
No, I don't think I'll be watching either. Though, did you read Chris Jericho was offered a spot on Dancing with the Stars? Turned it down.
That's right.
Mick Richards. Did you know that since Raw debuted, former WWE superstars Andre the Giant, Bam Bam Bigelow, Big Boss Man, Brady Boone, Brian Pillman, Davey Boy Smith, Chris Benoit, Chris Candido, Crash Holly, Kurt Hennig, Dick Murdoch, Dino Bravo, Earthquake, Eddie Guerrero, Hawk, Hercules, Big John Studd, Johnny Grunge, Junkyard Dog, Kerry Von Erich, Louis Spicoli, Mike Awesome, Fabulous Moolah, Jack Tunney, Owen Hart, Lou Albano, Lord Alfred Hayes, Rick Rude, Stan Stasiak, Freddie Blassie, Sapphire, Gorilla Monsoon, Bertha Faye, Rocco Rock, Sensational Sherry, Terry Gordy, Miss Elizabeth, Moondog Spot, Steve Williams, Luna Vachon, Yokozuna, Crush, Bad News Brown, Special Delivery Jones, Test, Ernie Ladd, Killer Kowalski, Umaga, Cousin Junior, Canyon, General Adnan, Steve Dahl, Ludwig Borga, and Buddy Rose have all died.
I didn't know that. Richard Holm. That's more than the cast of Friends, Frasier, and Cheers combined. Brilliant.
You guys, our listeners.
You guys are funny.
Christopher Kunkel. Wow, 3 weeks in a row my feedback has been read on the podcast. If I were a wrestler in WCW, this would be a 25-0 winning streak. Great job on getting reviewer on iTunes. Makes it a lot easier to get my wrestling fix out here. Funny thing is, I get the podcast before Raw even airs out here. Raw airs twice on Wednesday and again on Sunday, so hopefully I can catch it this week. Love the review on the WWE Originals album. The last wrestling album I bought was WWE Forcible Entry. It had up-and-coming at the time rock bands such as Drowning Pool, Saliva, and Disturbed performing versions of wrestlers' theme music. Great album, in my opinion. We forgot to lump Disturbed there into that
Disturbed,
album.
Disturbed, that's right.
The WWE go-to bands.
Cody Brown, just heard review away from Sunday. Excellent review of the original CD, and I'm glad to see that you both enjoyed the Dudley Boys song, as that's the only song that I enjoyed. By the way, you can actually purchase the original CD from iTunes. Keep up the good work. Yes.
Yeah, we could, but we're not. And finally, from Steven, I love the show, but please ID3 tag the review of Raw shows and Law before uploading them. When throwing them on my old school iPod Classic in the morning, it sucks having to change the ID3 tag myself or it won't show up properly. So ID3 tag the files, please, with question marks and exclamation points. I have never had this problem. Have you?
I don't know where Steven is downloading from. If he's downloading directly off of the Fight Network website, then yes, he will have the problem with...
I download it off the site, and it's always labeled. Put it into my iTunes, and it's labeled as Law.
Not for me. Not for me. When you download it directly from iTunes, then that is automatically labeled. But when I download it into my desktop and then put it onto my iTunes from there, it's not labeled, I don't think.
Like the title of it is not labeled?
Yeah. Do you know what an ID3 tag is?
Not really.
An ID3 tag is what lists the artist, the album, and the song title. You know, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know...
I don't know how to correct that, do you?
I do.
Okay, well, you can show me.
Yeah.
Excellent. Technology, folks.
Yeah, John Pollock.
It's Fast and Furious.
Yeah. Well, I'll show you how to turn on your computer if you need.
Thank you. So wait, next week, it's the 1 year anniversary of the shortest running weekly episodic podcast in wrestling or sports entertainment, Review Away. It'll be our 1 year, so it's your pick. One whole year, Way. It seems like just 52 weeks ago that we were sitting down for the first time to chat about Ground Zero.
Yes, yes. Well, seeing that it is our year anniversary, why not do a show that a lot of people have been clamoring for us to review? and that would be the classic Women's of Wrestling pay-per-view.
Wow. Unleashed.
Unleashed. Right here, next week.
Awesome, everyone. Women of Wrestling. Now, if you've never heard of this pay-per-view, this has gone down in history as one of the greatest, shittiest shows in history. It was so bad that it was pulled after its original airing in Canada and would not be replayed during the week as they had slotted it to be replayed.
Yeah, I have never seen the show.
Neither have I. I've never watched it.
I have seen episodes of WoW back when it was airing in Canada on the new VR, and it was the campiest all-women's wrestling. Like, it really was GLOW, but in the 2000s. Like, they brought back this 80s gimmicky, shitty wrestling into 2000s with the worst characters, with the worst wrestling by these models that just... Think about the Divas division and think about just a full hour of that. 3 hours of that.
All right, everybody. I thought that with our review next week being all women and with the following season of NXT being all women, I thought we would go out with some female song that would represent this whole upcoming wrestling endeavor, whether it be NXT or our review. So any suggestions, Way?
Of course. Girl power. Anything by the Spice Girls.
All right, let's go out with Spice Up Your Life, then, by the Spice Girls. Because NXT is about to spice up their ratings with Aloisa and AJ and Oksana.
All right, sure.
What a way to go out, everybody.
I hate this song. Let's change the song.
Okay, let's go out with...
Turn it off.
Okay, we'll stop. Right. Let's go out with... this song I just stumbled upon yesterday. It's the theme song for Season 3 of NXT. It's Kevin Rudolph and... who the fuck else is in it? It's featuring somebody.
Who cares?
It's coming up right now. It's I hate this song. It sucks. You make the ring fall, cause it's so beautiful and it's painful. You tell me I'm the only one. And it feels so good tonight, but it gets me every time. And I know I'll never change my ways, but every single night I pray. She getting my dollars the same rock. Umbrellas set up on the same block. The weather keep warming the same spot. Lil' mama handle us up on the pole like a pro, so my bitch off the same dock. Clouds over my head, thundering lightning, she gushing for bread. She make a storm, I'm already prepared. Who do I want, cause I could detect. Shorty, she more than jacuzzi with jazz. Can't use a mop for this, just hop away. It's about the drizzle, I walk on the set. I got the bar, girl, I'm telling you, you make you rainfall, cause it's so beautiful, that it's painful.